The following interview contains graphic content unsuitable for a younger audience. Listener discretion is advised. Here's how she starts her piece. Just what is it about the New Zealand Free Speech Union, NZFSU, defending the free speech of drag queens reading books to kids in a public library that bothered me and many others so much? Well, how long have you got? And so it goes from there. Rachel Stewart joins us at Reality Check Radio. Rachel, what sort of reaction have you had? We'll go into the detail of it shortly without sort of, you know, giving the whole game away because people should go in and read it. But what are you saying in that piece? People have just heard how it starts.
Well, I guess what dragged me into it more was that I am a member of the Free Speech Union, or I was. I'm certainly probably revisiting that. And to see them come out in support of the police who kicked out about three protesters out of the library in Auckland. I'm not sure which one it was, and to see them come out in support of the drag queens reading to the kids, and some of those kids are very young, I was a bit shocked because I don't see it as a free speech issue. I see it as a child safeguarding issue. And a lot of people will feel that I'm being mean and nasty and bigoted and transphobic or whatever you want to call it. But actually, I can't see how the Free Speech Union saw it as they did when children are going into these places with parents who, you know, I mean, I don't want it banned, but I don't think it should be in libraries, and I do want people to think about it, and I do want people to think about what they're doing to their children. And I think that drag queens look like big clowns. They put their woman face on, and, you know,
freaky
children
clowns.
Are kind of notoriously scared of clowns. But somehow we've been taught to normalise this business, and it ranges all through the LGBTQI whatever, plus whatever. And, you know, I also know that the LGB, which is me, would like to divorce ourselves from all of that. So it's all sort of interconnected, and that's why I wrote. And I always write when I feel passionate. I really felt passionate about that issue and the Free Speech Union defending them.
Hasn't the Free Speech Union got smart people in there? I mean, I went and saw their movie actually recently in Wellington, and there's Stephen Franks holding court around his table with, you know, all the people sort of hanging off every word kind of thing. You know, they're like, you know, look like they're doing stuff and saying things. And I think Jonathan Ayling is the rather youngish head of it. I met him at that event. And I see you mention him in the Substack piece. So these are smart people, aren't they? They understand, if they're the Free Speech Union, they understand fully the concept of free speech, and we have to say there are boundaries to that. You know, we know what they are, and if we can't verbalize them, we know them when we see them. So what's happened to them, do you think?
Well, I did wonder. I have been wondering about that because I feel that they are smart people. I mean, there's a number of people there that I have a lot of respect for. But on this one, I think they lost it, and I don't know why they thought it was kind of essential to defend the drag queens over the three protesters with their placards. And it's all very vague about whether they stopped the thing or not. We're not really sure. I think they're being a bit cute. I think that sometimes intelligent people think they're very cute with their little, you know, mantras, their kind of beliefs that they stick to no matter what. But on this one, I think they really cocked it up. And I worry that it was I almost felt like it was a recruitment drive for a different kind of clientele, because clearly it's too much for a lot of people. I had a huge response to that Substack. And I mean, I am only on Substack. I don't write for anyone else because I don't want to. But I was surprised at the level of feeling that people have about this. And I guess the Free Speech Union, I mean, child safeguarding, to me, that's our job. That's what parents do. That's what adults do. That's what we're supposed to do. I don't understand how they thought that they could intellectually somehow squirm out of that position. They're smart people. Let's watch and wait. But they doubled down, and they sort of had a go at me for attacking them, I think. But, you know, it's my free speech. I'm allowed it, right?
So they can't read the room.
It was clearly on this one they didn't. And look, I don't know whether it's because their CEO, if that's his title, I think it might be Jonathan Ayling, is young and ambitious, or whether it's his Baptist ministry kind of background that makes him feel worse about gobby women like me and not the drag queens talking to kids. I can't really answer that, but I do believe he's the wrong person for the job. But that's not my call. Yeah, so that was a big disappointment to me because free speech means a lot to me. But I think that, you know, we have limits on ages. We have R13s, R18s, R16s. What the hell have we got 5-year-olds sitting in libraries doing? We've all seen what happens in Britain, what is happening in Britain. And to let parents take them into a public facility and not think about the consequences of that. Now, I'm not saying that every drag queen's a paedophile, but I am saying that some of them are. And I'm pretty bold about that because you can see it happening all around the world. And if they really cared about those kids, Paul, why aren't they sitting there in their suit and tie, their day clothes, presumably they walk around during the day as men, reading to those children? Why are they sitting there in a dress and woman face and making fun of women? I mean, that's the other thing. They make fun of women. They are a caricature of who we are. And that I find that really depressing and distressing.
I want to pick apart that bit of it in a moment. Okay. Just finishing up on the Free Speech Union, I noticed that they came out in defense of Bethlehem College, didn't they?
Hmm.
And do you think they were just trying to rebalance and kind of in a marketing way to say, well, you know, if we're going to do it for Bethlehem, we do it for this. I don't know if it's comparing apples with apples. It clearly isn't. But do you think they might have just taken that opportunity?
They thought it was cute. Like I said, I think they thought it was cute.
Yep.
And I mean, the thing is, you send your kids to Bethlehem College because you want them to have a Christian education. You consciously know what you're doing when you send your kid there. Now, I don't know why they even defended Bethlehem College, actually. It was another reason to sort of think to yourself, why did they go there? It's, you know, it's a consumer market. You put your kids in schools that you want to. So, you know, it was a weird one to me, and it sort of blew my mind slightly.
Yeah. Okay, so this phenomenon that has been sort of growing recently of exposing children to this kind of, well, it's sexual behavior, isn't it? That's what it is.
Yeah, highly sexualized.
Yeah, very early. And parents, I don't know if it's mothers and fathers. I tell you what, if I was the dad, it wouldn't be happening. But I don't know who sort of thinks this is acceptable in the family and at parent level. But how would you explain this? I mean, is it the LGBTQ plus community just wanting to express who they are, and that just happens to be very sexual? Or is it, you mentioned pedophilia, is it a drive to sexualize, like an effort to sexualize children early, all those things? And why in the world would parents buy in and kind of be happy about it? You know, sort of take it as a badge of honor. Are they that weak of mind? What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that the media has done a fantastic job of driving us. And I mean, what I think is that people don't get down in the weeds. I think maybe because of my farming background, I kind of know what the weeds look like. Yeah. So when you have to eat meat sometimes on a farm, you've got to kill the animal. It's gross, you know, but you've got to do it.
It's the only way.
Yeah, you got to cut the throat. You got to do the thing. You got to pull the guts out. That's. So I always say to people, if you eat meat and you know, maybe just go down to the abattoir to see what you're dealing with here, because you know, if you can't do it yourself and you're happy with the industrialized model of meat eating, go down there and have a look. And that's okay. I eat meat, by the way.
Yes,
yeah. So I do get into the weeds. Now, the weeds are in this, that this is not some benign, lovely, jubbly, beautiful rainbows and puppies movement. I am the LGB. We want a divorce. We want a divorce because many of us, not all of us, but many of us don't want to be part of this. Now, what I think is happening with parents is that they don't get down in the weeds and they think this is all just who people are and they just want to express themselves and it's all benign and beautiful. No one in here is evil. It's almost like if you're trans at the moment, for instance, you've got some huge protection around you. You're incredibly entitled because the media and the government and the managerial elites and the lanyard swingers are all for this. And so we're all being Well, ostensibly brainwashed, but I think when you get to sort of our demographic in life, Paul, that takes a bit more to brainwash us. So, you know, like the thing is, say a woman, you know, we don't talk about things like what it's like for a man to cut off his penis. Few of them ever do. I think it's something like 4% of all trans women cut their penises off because, you know, men don't really like doing that. And I get it. But when they do, they don't talk about the ongoing problems with, you know, having to keep their neo-vagina, you know, kind of working. They don't talk about the trans man who was a woman and what it means for her to have a penis sewn on, and they're doing it, some of them are doing it, and cutting off their perfectly healthy breasts. They don't talk about the, on average, 20-something operations it takes for the penis to finally take. Then it never works. Then they have no sexual feeling at all. No one's really talked to them about this. This is the mutilation of our kids. This is, you know, and then we talk about the non-binaries and it's all just, we don't know who's cut what off and we don't know what's going on. You just how you feel when you wake up in the morning and suddenly I'm a, you know, I feel a pansexual wave coming over me and that's it. We're all supposed to keep up. The thing is crazy. It's nuts. And really that's, you know, that's how I see it.
Do you think there's anything ritualistic about the physical alterations, the surgeries, because that's heavy stuff, man. I mean, that's serious. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like...
I don't know. I mean, people tell me off for saying this, and I'm sure that people are going to be outraged when they hear this. Well, maybe not on your radio station. I hope not. But I suspect that it's mental health.
Hmm.
I can't see it any other way. And I think we're not doing them any good or a disservice. As I say, the health system... All of the people that are behind this huge movement, there's money in this movement. Don't think there isn't.
It's follow massive. The money?
Follow the money. And I did that in my 2018 column with the New Zealand Herald. And sure enough, you know, I talked to them about that and said follow the money and got pinged at the media council for three words because they couldn't get me on anything else. Something like the three words were it's already happening. That's proven to be true if you read that particular column. And, I mean, the hell I went through for that. Just writing something to tell people about self-ID coming in on July 1st in New Zealand, where for $10, pretty sure it's $10, you can walk down to the courthouse with a full beard and call yourself Pauletta Paul. You can be Pauletta.
Then don't you give can me suddenly, ideas.
No. And suddenly you can flash a little certificate at me and other things in a toilet somewhere or a prison with, and that's already happening, you know, trans women are in prison cells in New Zealand with women. Some of them are rapists. We know that. Again, the media won't go there. So it's an uphill climb to get this through to people that what they're supporting is this. We're only in the very beginning of this. I think the long-term game is transhumanism. But, you know, it's about money. It's like Pfizer and drugs. It's about money. If you can get people on hormone blockers and testosterone and puberty blockers, hormone, testosterone and puberty blockers for life, you've got it made as a pharmaceutical.
Yeah, it's just, and the reason I asked that question about, you know, ritualism is because, there's the money side of it, but you mentioned transhumanism, like a sort of a goal to morph the species as we know it to take it somewhere else. And that's a whole discussion in of itself. But also you've got the willing participants who are doing this work. And I can't believe it doesn't occur to them that this is crazy, man. What I'm doing is crazy, even if it's for the money. You know, I still don't quite get it.
No. I mean, and you know, seeing if we can talk about that, Leah Panapa and Miles Davis, is it? That's a good name, Miles Davis. I haven't heard of him before. I've heard of the – but anyway.
I don't think he plays that.
okay. Well, they capitulated very early for Today FM, didn't they, yesterday? Because clearly they were laughing about the term pregnant people, which I laugh and chuckle at too, although I find it incredibly serious as well. Most people don't like the term pregnant people. Most people know that women give birth and only women give birth and that men do not menstruate and that men do not give birth, but we still have to, I mean, the whole Midwifery Council of New Zealand, the whole organisation has changed the language. It's all through their manuals now. So all the midwives are having to play the game will get the boot. So what does that do? I mean, I noticed that it's really women, and I'm sure you do, Paul, that it's really women that are being made into something that doesn't exist. No one can define a woman anymore.
No.
So for women, that's very difficult. Men, on the other hand, we don't even have to worry about defining you because that's a given. We're the default, it would seem.
That's a really interesting point. Sorry to jump in, but you know, I've heard that question, what is a woman? I mean, if you asked what is a man, what would the answer be?
Well, I'd say you've probably got your whole kit and caboodle going on down there.
Yeah, but that's just a physical difference. So we're back to the reinforcing the truthful part of the biological truth of the argument.
Well, it's biology 101. I think, you know, when we look, well, you know, this is the weirdest thing. I can never get my head around it. Just let me go off on a little segue here. But, you know, people say things like, you know, follow the science, you know,
Yeah.
follow the science. And I think to myself, so you believe trans woman a woman, do you? You know, it's bizarre. Or you hear people who are very pro-abortion. That usually seems to be on the left, and that's fine. And I'm not anti-abortion, by the way. But what I do note is that they tell people that everyone has a right to do what they want with their body. Women have a right to do what with their body. But then we were told we had to have the jab. You know, follow the science. It's just bizarre to me. The
Well,
mental gymnastics in this thing are up the wazoo.
that's it is mental gymnastics. It's kind of a mental derangement at a scale that I can't recall. Maybe
No,
it's
me
happened
neither.
before, but not in my
No.
lifetime.
No, and here
Is
we
it?
are trying to educate people in their 30s who are having kids to maybe have a little bit of a think about thousands and hundreds of thousands of years of biology and male femaleness and what that's achieved before they take their kids off to see drag queens thinking it's just all lovely and benign. I mean, people just need to have a little think about this.
So you say that you've had, you know, quite a reaction to that Substack. And I take it you mean by that it's basically in support of
Yes.
your position. And I know you've mentioned the Free Speech Union. Have they come back to you in any serious way to kind of debate this or?
No. I had one member of the board send me an email and tell me off for being a naughty little girl for, well, that's how it felt. And he's got a greater mind than me, obviously. Maybe he thinks. But and I just said to him, look, this email's unwelcome. I don't need to be told off for having an opinion, do I? And he got it, and he backed off, and he did apologise in a way. So I'm glad about that. But yeah, no, they have not. They have not. They have doubled down on their position. They think they know what they're doing, and it's a case of, and that's fine. And look, it's a difference of opinion on this, but I feel that if they don't, they're going to lose some people over this one. There was a lot of, I don't know if you noticed, but there was a lot of feeling in social media about what they did. And most of it was they were getting ratioed pretty badly there.
Yeah, ratioed. Yeah. I've seen, you know, pop up on my feeds, mainly from the US. You know, people have taken videos of these performances in libraries and schools. And some of them, I would say, are basically pornographic in the posing. And, you know,
Yes.
it's more than just having fun, kids, you know, with, like someone who might used to come to a birthday party like dressed up as a pirate or something. It's way more than that.
Oh,
Do you
yes.
think it tells and with the support that it gets, because I think you'd have to have a blind spot otherwise to find this acceptable for your children in the role, responsible role of being a parent. Do you think that it actually reflects a nature of our society that we didn't quite see before? And that is that people are highly, it turns out, even mothers and fathers, normal-looking suburban people, sexualized.
Yeah, well, I ha that has crossed my mind, but I kind of don't want to go there and
No,
think
I don't
about
want to go there either, but you know,
Yeah,
it does cross your mind. You
it
know,
does.
is there a market for this?
Clearly,
Yeah.
clearly. But I, but the problem we've got is that we used to have a society that would we would hear the people that would come out like me and you and say, look, this isn't okay, and here's why. Now we have to. Well, I get to talk to you now, and that's great. And I'm really glad that your radio station now exists because I can talk about this. And you know, you could do it with you know various other ones, but well, one other one, radio station. But really, the media's got this absolutely locked up. You can't have a different opinion. You just cannot do it. And you and I, you know, both know that you are locked out. So people are not hearing the other side. And when they're only getting one line of propaganda, which is how I see it, and they're doing the bidding of God knows who, I don't know who's funding what and where, then you have to say, well, parents are just taking in the information they're getting and all they're getting is one side. And really, it's a lot to get our side.
The Prime Minister, Chippy. Was up at the Rainbow Parade, whatever it's called, in Auckland. Yeah, fine.
Pride.
I beg your pardon.
We need a month, us gay people. We need a month to be proud of who we have sex with, but yes.
Well, okay. Before I talk about Chippy, one thing I would note, because I remember standing on the steps of Parliament, I think in 1986, and I remember Norm Jones barking away about sodomy and all that sort of stuff. The Salvation Army were there all lined up, looking like an army. And here were us young guys, more younger back then, you know, trying to help, I forget the politician, the Wellington politician.
Fran.
Yeah. Now, you know, get this whole thing over the line, because it was a no-brainer, basic human right. So there was kind of no argument and it got over the line. I thought, and it would take a few years to settle down after that as people got used to it and their thinking adjusted. I thought that was done and dusted. I thought, okay, the thing that you realize something's normal when you don't hear about it.
That's, you know? Right.
And
exactly.
And it kind of went away. And before I get to Chippy, why do you think there's such, is it just, you know, like you said before, if you're never criticized and you're lauded, you just feel like a master of the universe. You can do anything, yeah. Say anything, and everyone will just fall in front of you onto their knees and kind of worship. To make out, and I remember those days, make out that never happened.
Yeah. It's like, what rights do I need more? What rights do you have that I don't have? What rights do trans people not have that we have, Paul? We all our rights are intact. In fact, I'd argue that, you know, so we got marriage. I thought that was the deal. That was done and dusted. But yeah. Well, sure enough. That's right.
Yeah.
I think that, I had a brilliant thought. It's gone out of my head. But I think, yeah, the pride thing being a month. So why do I need a month to celebrate? Here's the thing. I don't want to be celebrated for my gayness. And I would have thought trans people would feel the same, but hey, whatever. I just want to be ignored. This is not what I want to be known as. A gay person is just part of who I am. I've been that way since the 70s. It was a different deal in those days. But I don't want to be celebrated. And I don't want a month. I just like the blending in. And for a while there, we just did. And that was when the marriage thing came in and that got passed. And Fran Wilde did her thing. And we've had, and you know, and we just, and Georgina Beyer just got on with her life and became a mayor. And
she became a mayor. Because in the end, it was the content of your character. They didn't care about anything else.
Exactly. Now, I'm a gay person who's vilified because I don't agree with what's going on in the world. So now I'm outside my own little rainbow community. This rainbow community bullshit, excuse my swearing, but it's not a community. We're all at war. The LGBs that I know and see, don't want to be part of this. We are embarrassed. There's going to be there's already a backlash against us because we're married to the TQI. They are not a sexual predilection.
Who wrote you in, by the way? It just sort of happened.
I mean, we just watched it happening. It went from being LGB, the T got tagged on, and then all the funding came. So, you know, in England, Stonewall, here, Rainbow Tick. I mean, these are dodgy characters, in my opinion.
Follow the money again, is it?
Yeah, money. They get the money from the lobby group. I mean, there's huge money coming out of California for lobby groups, and I've seen that money funneled to gender minorities, Aotearoa. Oh, it's been funneled to.
But wait, weren't the protesters being funded from overseas?
Oh, yeah, apparently, yeah.
But these guys are. Was it verifiable that they are?
Yeah, it is verifiable that they are.
So no one ever talks about that.
So the money from overseas is all good as long as it's going to the right cause, whatever that is. But you know, clearly it's the trans movement. So that's where it got tacked on, and that's why it got tacked on, because the money came in. They'd already won. They'd won everything for LGB. So they decided, oh, we'll just tack the T on, and all of a sudden the millions start flowing. And here we are today.
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? Follow the money. I always say that, and I said that in that column in 2018. Well, man, did I get into trouble.
I'm talking with old school Kiwi journalist Rachel Stewart.
Christopher Hipkins, the Prime Minister, Chippy, they call him. He was at the that parade. That I don't know if he was there for the whole week, but he was there, and he had a
I saw the T-shirt.
He had a very clear T-shirt, and presumably he's okay with what you wrote about. You know, the bigger issue that around the Substack piece that you did. Now he's the Prime Minister. He's the leader of the country. Yet he's gone up in the polls, and so is the party. I mean, how does that work?
I don't know. I don't get it at all. You know, I'm also aware that this is the man who was the education minister in our whole
curriculum. COVID minister.
And the COVID minister, that's right. And that's, you know, what he did to the pregnant woman
Kids, shortening Charlotte the period Bellis. Between doses for young kids against advice. Yeah,
that's right. So he'll pick up a few. I think he's in the honeymoon period. I don't think it will last. I hope not. I think that seeing him at the Pride thing, it just made me remember and think very carefully about the curriculum that he's overseen for young children. I know people pulling their kids out of school everywhere. Wow. So because they're being taught, I mean, friend's seven-year-old came home the other day and said, "Mom, I can become a boy if I want to." And she said, "What are you talking about?" And she said, "Oh, they talked today about, you know, and we learned about dildos and we learned about some sex toys. And this is happening. This is happening." People say it isn't happening.
The age?
Seven. Seven.
Man.
It's happening. It's in the schools. And parents need to go to the school. And I know, I've got a friend who's a principal. And as long as she's principal, she said, "We'll never be teaching that here." She said that every other day parents are coming into her office and saying, "Please promise you're not going to teach my kids these things that I keep hearing about my other friends' parents, you know, they're telling me that it's happening at their schools." And she said, "As long as I'm principal, it won't happen." But she has to reassure these parents because they say, "We want a heads up because we want to get our kids out of school if you start teaching them stuff." And it is happening, no doubt.
Journalism. Because the media is, I guess, probably one of the most important components of all of this, because that's how everyday people get information, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, and I was telling you just before we started rolling, you know, I've been around newsrooms for a long time, you know, decades, over four decades. Mm-hmm. And I arrived in that scene at a time where it was literally a different world. And you know, I look back to those days and fondly remember them, because I understand more than ever now that the principles that governed the whole business were very rational, very fair, actually, very fair, and gave the consumer or the listener or the reader or whatever the credibility of being able to use the information as clear and factually as you could make it, as verified as you could, and it's impossible to go full 100%, but as much as you could with those principles to make of it, using their own intelligence and their own kind of the way they read the world, to make of it what they will. I've seen that change and almost, I'd say, flip 180 degrees in that time where, and I know because I've been in news quite recently where, you know, we're saying things, and I was kind of roped in, that I knew were factually incorrect. And you mentioned, you know, the Today FM thing.
Hmm.
Well, and that was over, I think, reporting, what was it, pregnant people.
Pregnant people.
Well, I had one, you know, people who menstruate, which, you know.
We know who they are, don't we, Paul?
Well, I'm still confused, Rachel. no one ever answered that for me. It could be anyone, you know. But I remember having a discussion, which was completely unnecessary because, I mean, you're trying to convince me otherwise around that, because I wanted it reworded. I wanted it to be, you know, women specific, because that is the fact.
Mm.
And that was very tense. So I'm wondering from your perspective, I mean, I've hovered around it. You've been in it. What's gone wrong? Is it the way we educate journalists, which has been captured by university system and, you know, commodified into student loans and things like that. And I guess that's a follow the money thing. But it really, I think, is one of our most serious problems. I don't know how you address it rather than, you know, maybe reinventing another media and kind of we're doing that here. But they still have lots of power. So I'm interested to get your thoughts on how this has happened, how far it's gone, and can you see, you know, the game being up anytime?
I some days I can. Some days I feel like the game will be up and I feel like we're on, we're winning, and then other days I feel incredibly down about it and think we're losing. I'm 50-50 on that. I think we're at a very pivotal point in the history of media in the world, to be honest, Western media anyway. Again, I think it comes from the journalism schools. They're very different from what you and I know, Paul, knew. I think it started there. I think most journalists now feel they're activists. There was that survey that came out recently, and most of them identified very much to the left. I think there was like 13% or something that were more conservative. So we don't have that sort of, you know, balance of Labour, National kind of, you know, it's all just, I mean, they're both the same now to me, really.
Yeah.
So there's that. I think it's a follow the money situation too, because I think what happened is that they came out of journalism school and then they went straight to the Herald, or they went straight to a provincial paper, or they went straight to stuff. And then they are encouraged to be sort of as outrageous as they want, really, and because it's clickbait and it's going to get people looking. I think there's money in that. Journalism's been struggling for a long time. Then there was the, you know, PI Journalism Fund, the, what was it called? The investment.
I know what you're talking about. The provincial journalist report on local.
$55 million or whatever, and I think it's been more than that. You know, and they signed things where they signed things about how they would talk about Te Tiriti and the treaty and trans stuff. I've seen documents. So, you know, they're funded to do it. Government's leading us. And who's leading the government? And I don't know, but we're seeing it in Canada. We're seeing it in Britain. We're seeing it in America. It's falling apart in Britain now. It's starting to fall apart in America. We'll be the last cab off the rank. Not, you know, we're very slow to catch up. But it's like the drag queen thing. You know, if you saw what I see, because I was stupid enough to take a deep dive into this whole subject years ago and it's ruined my life in many ways. If you see what I see in the fetishes and the flashing and the, you know, with the drag queens, I think most people would think differently, but they don't go looking because they don't want to go in the weeds. They don't want to see that animal being gutted and skinned before they eat it, you know? So before you buy this bullshit, people, have a little think about what you're supporting, because the trans thing is killing people. It's killing people.
Yeah, and the big unknown is what happens, you know, when young people grow up. And I've got a horrible feeling they're going to feel like they have been sold something that I had no idea what they were buying. And I can't begin to imagine the psychological effects of, if you're a woman, realizing that you have taken yourself out of, well, being able to have a family and doing the things that will, and I think they do, you know, maybe not for some, but that they naturally come upon you anyway at a certain time of life. This is all being done way before that. I can't imagine the anger and the psychological damage and what, at any scale, that has, that sort of effect it has on a, you know, an operating society.
I had a friend here the other day I've known since he was about 15 or 16, actually. He was a lovely young gay man who, when we were young. And then he, at about 29, I think, 28, he fully transitioned, went through the whole situation. He's now 50-something, maybe late 50s. And I said to him, he was here for dinner, so I obviously don't hate trans people. but I said, I call her when she's here because I've known her as a she for so long, but generally I don't use pronouns. But he, sat here for dinner, and we talked about a sex life, which he willingly shared. And I said, well, what's it like? And he said, I don't have one. I can't feel anything. I've got nothing. There's nothing. If I had known then what I know now, I would never have done this. He said, I have a fake vagina. I can only have sex as in a homosexual way. I feel nothing. I get no pleasure whatsoever. And I said, so what was the point? When you could have been a gay, gorgeous gay man, because he was, and had you pick of the bunch and had lots of very good sexual experiences in your life. And he said, I know. And he started crying. And, you know, and that's what we're up against. People don't know. People don't know what's going on here. Why do this to people? Yeah. Well, but, of course, as I say, most of them don't go and have surgery. So.
Yeah, well, that's telling, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of evil.
I hate to say it, but I feel like it is. I feel like it's very dark and it's very deep, and I don't know why people don't. And I have real trouble these days mixing with people who feel that this is all normal. I just have to get up and walk out or leave. I can't have these conversations with anyone. Yeah. I don't ruin friendships over it. Or, well, maybe I do. But I just, if I go to a dinner party or something, people are talking about, oh, yes, and, you know, they, them, and then they're talking about it normally, I just find myself I have to leave. I get emotional about it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Just that apology, Leah Panapa and Miles Davis. Hmm. Never apologize, right?
Never apologize. Never.
That's a world of hurt. Apologize.
It's a world of hurt. They'll just keep coming at you like, you know, like you said before, a wounded animal at the end of the pack. Never. And I drive the trans rights activists nuts because I never back down. I never apologize. I never apologize for that tweet, which got the police around here to try and get my guns for a tweet, which some of your listeners will know about.
I've read that.
I mean, I'll never apologize because I didn't do anything wrong. And I'll never apologize for my belief system. And why should I? And if you do, and Leah and Miles will find out, it's just worse. And you shouldn't do it. And I would have, if I were them, I would have walked away. And more people need to do it. And now, admittedly, I did it and I have other income streams, so it wasn't the biggest deal in the world, but still took a lot to leave a New Zealand Herald column willingly and go, no, I'm not going to be censored. You're not going to tell me what I can't talk about or how I talk about it, really. I mean, I listen to editors and I take their advice, but don't tell me I can't mention Speak Up for Women having a talk that was cancelled by a council at a library or something. I wanted to talk about that and I wasn't allowed to. So I think people need to start walking and you can't lose everybody. You can't lose everybody. Leah and Miles are very good at what they do. And it would have been a big statement if they'd said, get stuffed.
That's the strong arm, isn't it? Is people's futures and livelihoods. That keeps coming up everywhere. Mm. As a coercive, almost people feel that they're a slave to that, and they kind of are. We all are.
Yeah.
But that is the circuit breaker for standing up for what's right. And it seems that people know that and they exploit it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the bullying's getting... I mean, when we start listening to Twitter more than we start listening to real life, although, you know, it kind of is real life in some ways because it can impact your real life. I know all about that. But, you know, these are just people bullying people into thinking that it's strength in numbers. It's just that they're the only people going off. The trannies are all the trans rights activists and the trannies are all very much in it together, and they do it in bulk numbers, and that's how they kind of achieve what they want to achieve, and that's how they get rid of people, and that's how they kill careers. That's what they do. And that's how they got the police to come knock on my door and take my guns away.
The fact that the police even turned up.
Yeah, 6 weeks later, I could have, you know, if I was really a danger. They turned up 6 weeks after a tweet, a joke tweet, a sort of a Thelma and Louise trope.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you've probably seen it.
I have.
Not directed at anyone specifically, particularly, and said that, oh, since Christchurch, you know, we have to be more careful and we've been told to come and get your guns. And I just went, oh, okay. And they woke me up at, you know, 7 a.m. or something. And I said, but why? And he said, well, you know, here's the paperwork and you have to prove you're a fit and proper person now to have firearms because we think you're a danger to transgender people. And I said to the two cops, actually, I said, they were just foot soldiers, so I couldn't blame them really. And I just said, so do you think Laurel Hubbard's a man or a woman? Because the Olympics were on at the time.
Yeah.
And they just went, oh, F off. You're joking. And I went, yeah, well, that's what you've just done to me. But, hey, that's okay. You take my gun, back your car and don't let the neighbours see. Sort of, you know, and then I had 3 weeks to put in a application to defend myself with pages and pages of what a great solicitor I have been, and I have actually been. Never had any problems with firearms, had them since I was very young. Farming background, you know how it is. And but, you know, it cost me $14,500 in legal fees.
Well, that's called lawfare, isn't it? Where they sort of, it's a form of sort of kind of warfare on someone using the law.
Yeah.
And
the Free Speech Union didn't actually stand up for me then either, Paul, by the way.
Were you a member then?
I don't know. I may have been, but I wouldn't have thought that would have been conditional considering the people they stand up for, obviously, like drag queens. They didn't. They did write a submission and they mentioned it in their submission, to be fair to government, but they never actually said, can we help? So I never had any help from them, really. And I, you know, I only think about that now since the other day. I think, yeah, well, why wasn't I helped? Is it guns or something? Is it suddenly if you have guns, you're evil? Because that's the world we're in now. We tell everyone who's got guns they're evil. Well, in New Zealand in the 60s and 70s when I grew up, and farming, you have guns. You have to put animals out of their misery. You have to kill possums. You have to shoot rabbits. It's just what you do. And I've been a hunter all my life, so it's, yeah, weird. It's a weird world we're in. I don't understand it.
We'll finish up in just a moment. It's been a great chat, by the way. Those police who came to your door, I'm just curious. Did you kind of observe their body language and their demeanor to try and maybe assess whether, you know, they really believed what they were doing, or were they sheepish and sort of embarrassed to be there? Because that would speak to the attitude of the you know, the foot soldiers and where they're coming from. What were your impressions of them?
Well, it sort of, the whole thing went on for about half an hour because they'd woken me out of a deep sleep, and it was a frosty July morning. It was freezing. So when I went to the door, because I heard these keys banging on the kitchen window, and I thought, oh, who the hell is this? And I went
out. Get your gun.
I just thought, well, I had my PJs on, and I'm freezing. It was freezing. Anyway, I opened the door and said, yeah, well, how can I help you? And he actually put his foot in the door. He actually put his foot in the screen door, and I said, so, yes. And he said, we've come for your guns. We've got a, you know, an order here and under the new act and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, obviously you're going to make me, so shall I ring my lawyer or what should I do? And they said, you can ring your lawyer, but we're not letting you out your guns. So I read the thing that they put in front of me, and it was this gibberish about I'm high risk at killing trans people or some bullshit.
So someone wrote that. Someone wrote
that. Police. Somebody wrote that from the police. Yeah, this big document. I've got it. It's unbelievable, actually, frankly. And I just started laughing. But they stood there and they kept saying, so where's the key to your gun? Where's your guns? I said, well, my gun's safe, locked away. Where's the key? And I said, you know, I really don't know. I was half asleep. So I'm looking around all of that. Checking everywhere the guns, you know, the keys could be. Finally found them in the filing cabinet, locked away separately. Then I was shaking so much because I was cold and I'd been woken up. But more to the point, I got two big burly policemen standing in my house. I'm kind of in shock, right? Yeah. And it's over a tweet that everyone knew was a joke, and funny or not, I thought it was bloody hilarious, but, you know, whatever. So did other people. I said, here's my gun cabinet. So we took him down to the room and I sat on the edge of my bed and I said, you'll have to open it up because I'm shaking too much. And he opens the door of the thing and he goes, oh, God, that's a beautiful gun cabinet. I said, oh, thank you very much. I was, you know, I'm still kind of, you know, flattered by that. And he goes, oh, this is really nice. And his mate goes, yeah, these spikers are really good. And anyway, they put the thing in, got the guns out, said, oh, that's a nice shotgun. Oh, that's not, you know. And then in the end, it ended up quite good. But I wasn't, you know, belligerent, or I was just sort of, I'm dumbfounded, gobsmacked, and friendly to them because it wasn't their fault.
Yeah,
they were sent. So you know, pages and pages later, Stephen Frank's firm doing it. Stephen, yeah, good brain. Yeah. We got my guns back. So yeah, but I don't regret any of it. I'd spend the money again. I wish the Free Speech Union had been a bit more vocal and maybe a bit more helpful. I had people offering to help with money and stuff, but I didn't go that route. I did think, though, that I would go the full Monty and go to court if I had to, and we made it. And bottom line is we didn't have to because the police would have looked absolutely stupid.
They knew that, right?
They knew that. And I had, you know, people writing references like, you know, the head of the fish and game who'd been hunting with me. And, you know, they really couldn't. They had nowhere to go. So they gave it back, but it was just an expensive little lesson, and I'm sure that the TRAs are very happy with what they achieved.
So to finish up, back to, you know, where we started with the Free Speech Union, the Substack piece. In your mind, if they're to restore credibility, in your mind, What do they have to do? And how do they have to demonstrate that?
I think they need to just sober up a little bit, because I think I've watched their tweets lately, and I don't know who's doing them, but they've become very young, youthful and young and sort of a bit silly. I think they have to just be a bit more somber and sober, and I think there are some really big issues that that need a lot of work. I think the Leah Panipa one, they should really, they've said something today, but are they going to help him? I mean, you know, or I don't know. I just think they need to think it through. I'm not saying that they shouldn't deal with any of this gender critical stuff or any of this trans LGBT stuff at all, but I think to do what they did comparing Bethlehem College to, you know, if they do that, then we have to help the drag queens. I think that was just, apples and oranges. I don't understand it. I think they've got to sober up and take it a bit more seriously. That's what I think.
And do you have a message from your personal perspective to parents?
Well, stupid is as stupid does. I think I said that in the Substack. I think parents, if you're going to be a little bit stupid, go ahead. If you think
do it to yourself, right? Not to your kids.
Sorry. Go yourself. Don't take your kids. Have a little think about what you're doing to them. You are normalizing men in women face, making caricatures, cartoon characters out of women to children. What is that telling your sons? What is that telling your daughters?
Exactly.
And that's, I just think, you know, you need to sober up too, actually.
Rachel Stewart, thank you for being one of our early guests on our new Reality Check Radio. Great talking to you, and we will talk again, I am sure.
Thank you, Paul.
Rational discussion, common sense, open debate, RCR, Reality Check Radio with Paul Brennan.